Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Matt Deegan. On the show this week, what's been going on at S4C? And when should governments interfere with the media? Not at all, according to Jeff Zucker, as he insists Abu Dhabi will stay clear of editorial at The Telegraph. Is that even possible? Our panel discusses all of this, plus the Newsnight cuts that have been confirmed. And in the media quiz, we mumble the headlines. That's all coming up in this edition of the Media Podcast. In news this week, everyone's favourite madman, Elon Musk, had tough love for advertisers fleeing X, telling the New York Times the whole world will know that those advertisers killed the company, before adding, if someone's going to try to blackmail me with advertising, blackmail me with money. Go fuck yourself. Lovely. Netflix has been accused by Ofcom of exaggerating the threat of new streaming laws. The regulator's chair, Michael Grade, was speaking at the Voice of the Viewer and Listener conference on Wednesday and said the streamers were attempting to frighten the life out of everybody by claiming that they will need to purge content from their platforms to avoid falling foul of the new laws. And many an audio producer and music lover is scanning through their Spotify stats today as the platform has revealed its annual audit on consumer usage. Innovations include a video message from your favourite music artist of the year thanking you for your listening. Maybe you'll get one from me next year for me being your favourite podcast host. We'll see. Now joining me at the London Podcast Studios, we welcome back media writer Tara Conlon. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
It's lovely to see you in person.
Nice to see you too.
Have you been watching Squid Game?
I have, actually.
This is the new version of Squid Game.
Yeah, Squid Game, the challenge. So it's real life Squid Game. And yeah, I went to the screening of the first episode last week, I think it was now. And yeah, I loved it. I have to say, the scale of it, the gameplay, just the attention to detail and actually the backstories of the contestants. Great casting, it's, you know, really well edited. But just the huge, you know, from a TV geek point of view, having that many, you know, over 400 contestants, it's just extraordinary. But aside from the scale, it's really interesting to watch, and it's you know, really well edited as well.
Is it a UK show? Is it Studio Lambert?
It's a Studio Lambert, yeah. And The Garden, so it's co-production between the two of them. It's epic. I mean, it's got about 20 million views in the first week worldwide. I think that's worldwide. And that's about 2 million after 5 days, according to Barb in the UK.
Because it's rare for a show to kind of hit the Barb streaming rankings, isn't it?
Exactly, yes. I think, was it Clarkson Farm got about 4 million, but that was post Meghan Markle, and no one on, you know, Squid Game had to slag off Meghan Markle to get into the ratings, although Clarkson's Farm is very good. It's a really, for an unscripted show, obviously The Crown's been out a couple of weeks, but it's doing, you know, sort of almost double what The Crown is doing. For an unscripted show to get that kind of level, I mean, they must be very, very pleased.
Netflix has been doing a little bit of this recently, haven't they? A bit more quiz showy, fact-enty stuff. It's got to be pretty encouraging for them, even though I'm sure it was hugely expensive to make.
Yes, I think so. I mean, off the back of the drama, they obviously thought, what more can we do out of this? And Studio Lambert and The Garden, with their background and their pedigree, were the ones to kind of take it on and make that happen. It was a big ask, but I think they were the people to do it. But it is really interesting. I mean, I'm so old, I can remember talking to Netflix years ago when they first started out, and they said they wouldn't do those big kind of entertainment sort of shows, but they have, and they've done them really well. And it's set a new bar, I think, you know, in those big kind of reality. I mean, it's you know, it's high caliber.
It's got a bit of Big Brother in there, it's a bit of game show in there, a little bit of everything.
The sets are amazing. Mm. I mean, for me, it lends itself to a location-based entertainment deal to happen. Mm. That, a bit like Crystal Maze, you know, so viewers can go and immerse themselves in it. Now they've shown it can be played by real people.
Chisel a bit of biscuit, they can do that.
Well, exactly. But I'm sure you can buy the biscuits.
And next to Tara, we've got the head of commercial marketing at Bauer, George Butler. Hello, George.
Hello, Matt.
Have you been watching Squid Game, the series?
I have. I'm probably about halfway through it. It is amazing. I just think whoever has been in charge of casting that show, what a great job they've done.
But also 450 people, and then half of them, no spoilers, half of them go in the sort of first episode. That's got to be a killer.
I mean, you can imagine if you were one of the kind of the casting execs and you brought in 10 people and they're all gone before they've even hit the camera. But it is brilliant. I mean, the way that they've kind of got these character arcs where you think someone's a villain and you quite like them, and then you think they're awful again, and it is geniusly casted. Very, very, very good.
Well, go and watch it on Netflix. I mean, sort of speaking of kind of reality telly, these shows love a radio personality, don't they? And definitely in I'm a Celebrity this year, lots of radio and audio folk.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Sam Thompson, Hits Radio, Staying Relevant podcast. Marvin's in there, obviously Capital and Hart. There is another presenter from another radio station, slightly more controversial than Sam and Marvin. But Lucy Cave, who heads up our podcasts at Bowie, she's written a really interesting piece in the Media Leader about why I'm a Celebrity, but actually reality shows in general, love a radio and podcast host. And it's because they've got those skills of communicating with the audience, having that kind of compassion and understanding of what is going on in people's lives, and just being able to connect with people and doing that on a day-to-day basis, and really having that kind of personal, uniquely intimate relationship with the audience that really only radio and podcast can do. It translates so well when they're in the camp, obviously with their campmates, but equally with all the millions watching at home. They just make the best campmates. And you've seen, obviously, you know, Series 1, Tony Blackburn, Jordan North, Fleur Easton amazingly. And I think Sam could do pretty well this year.
Well, I did enjoy Sam mentioning the British Podcast Awards Listener's Choice. Obviously have a little bit of background in that. So
compared to Britney, and was it the Grammys or the MTV?
Yeah, the Grammys. Yeah. Exactly where it should be.
Well, 100%.
Now, ongoing soap opera of The Telegraph. So the auction's been paused, and Jeff Zucker has appeared as the main character, insisting that concerns about editorial influence are misplaced. This is because of his bid, isn't it, Tara?
Yes, and it's interesting. It's such a saga. I don't know if you've read Jay Martinson's book about the bug, but it's really good, really good. And it is a saga, as you say. There is now, I think the deadline is tomorrow, isn't it, as to when they are supposed to have finalised everything. And but it's got politics in it. It's got big money. It's got Middle East money. And I think the interesting thing is Lucy Fraser has said that she might intervene on the grounds of public interest, an intervention notice.
Yeah, I mean, Jeff Zucker, ex-CNN, has a kind of investment firm, Redbird, that it seems like the main supporters of, who the kind of Abu Dhabi cash, have kind of gone, please go for The Telegraph on our behalf. He's been somewhat roughed up by Fleet Street, hasn't he? I don't know whether he thought this would be happening, but it does. They can certainly turn, can't they, when they want to?
Well, I think particularly when you've got the Mail, obviously, as an interested party, because they want to buy it as well, and David Montgomery. So it's not really surprising if other, you know, interested parties who have their own newspapers are going to have a particular point of view on it. But it's influence. That's the key, isn't it? It's about influence and politics and foreign money and where it will end up. I mean, it's just an extraordinary tale, isn't it, about a newspaper in a time when you think that newspapers are declining, but their perceived political interest is considered very important to people with a lot of money.
And they've talked a lot about the potential for it to work overseas. So taking a sort of soft right-wing paper, particularly to America, where obviously there's lots of very, very right-wing press that does quite well. You're an international business in Bauer. Does everything work in every market? Can you easily take a brand and drop it somewhere else?
I think, you know, the Bauer model is we're very much an international business, but as it stands, there isn't too much crossover, you know, with the brands. So, you know, you don't really have Absolute Radio Germany or Absolute Radio Poland. So I think, you know, our model is very different. Each market kind of has, you know, their own brands that, kind of are allowed to do what they do best. And the kind of the synergies come at the level above. And that's where we kind of really feel the power of being an international organization.
So like tech or platforms? Or
yeah, whether
like
it's innovation, whether it's tech, whether it's, you know, products. Even from a commercial point of view, there's kind of the ability to have a strategy which sits beyond just one nation. So there are massive advantages to it. And you can really kind of leverage, you know, the international scales there. But yeah, very different, I suppose, to kind of taking one of our brands and putting it into one of the different countries. But that said, podcasts are a space where, especially with the kind of the translation abilities that are available in audio these days, I think that is a really interesting space where which we are looking at. So, you know, there are things that you
and
can
easy, do. Easier to test out on a podcast than it is a radio station. I'm kind of intrigued with the Telegraph, this thing about kind of Jeff being roughed up, because there's kind of an inertia of owners, isn't there? Once you become an owner, you become untouchable. They don't really tend to give each other a kick in so much.
No, sometimes they do. I mean, I'm just trying to remember, you know, when I used to work on the Daily Mail and obviously writing about telly, writing about media, sometimes it does cross over. When it comes to something like this, they work across so many different platforms now. You know, it's not just newspapers. They've got podcasts, they've got video. So no one really is a disinterested party writing about media these days.
Everyone's got something in the game. Over at S4C, The Guardian have reported on Thursday that the Welsh language broadcaster has been the subject of a scathing letter by former head Sean Doyle. Tara, Doyle was let go earlier this year after accusations of bullying, something she denies. Do we know what the letter says?
Well, I mean, it's contentious and for me, it sort of speaks to a wider issue about what's going on in television. There is, I think the film and TV and film charity have done quite a lot of work on this about perceived bullying and how you manage staff within media, within a fast-paced media industry, I think is really important. And I think it speaks to that. And I think it's become a sort of a lightning rod, I would say, perhaps for that as well.
George, S4C's sort of taxpayer-funded, obviously sort of similar-ish to the BBC. The money comes in a sort of rounded route back through to them. They don't seem that interested in getting involved as they do with the BBC. Is it because there's just no headlines for them talking about what's happening in Cardiff? I mean, S4C has had a lot of trouble recently. And it doesn't seem to be sort of stopping anytime soon.
Well, it's interesting what you say, actually, because what you said about why is it not getting as much coverage? Because it is, you know, it's publicly funded. And the same happened with local radio. I wrote a story recently about BBC local radio. And whether or not because it is outside of the sort of London bubble, it perhaps, I think, doesn't get the attention that it should have done. And I think Broadcast Magazine has done quite a bit about S4C as well, and I think it should be spotlighted, you know, just because it's in the regions that, you know, or in a nation, that doesn't mean that it isn't important. And it was the same with local radio, and anything about the culture and the funding, I think, is really important. It should be highlighted, it should be looked at and investigated in the same way as something, you know, at the BBC.
I mean, you see, George, don't you, that obviously Liz Truss came apart somewhat when she was faced with BBC local radio journalists. It's easy to ignore what's going on outside of London.
It very much is. But I think it's a broader media land thing. I mean, you know, we work with a lot of advertisers, and a lot of the media you know, planners, a lot of the media strategists, owners, creatives, they're based in London. And typically you get the tube to work. And that means you don't listen to the radio in the morning. So sometimes we do come across that where we're going and I'm talking about breakfast shows, or we're talking about stations that have millions of listeners. And you get faced with a reaction that's like, oh, really? Dave Berry gets that many million? Yeah. So I think there is that thing where we you know, we're probably all a part of the London bubble in a sense. But actually, you do have to look a bit at outside of your own media consumption sometimes, don't you? It's to kind of realise what the nation is doing, the nation is consuming.
To map your own thoughts that, like, surely everybody consumes everything this way.
And that's a very good point. And I think it's a wider point about this switchover to, you know, switching off the old school broadcaster, should we call it, TV signal, the getting rid of linear channels and moving over to internet TV. And there's still a big percentage of the population who won't be able to do that, for whether or not it's they can't get the signal or whether or not they can't afford, you know, the streaming. And it's quite difficult to remind some people, some TV executives, that there are people out there who are going to be affected by this. And it's not as easy. I mean, the BBC is supposed to be, you know, switching up and talking about it, you know, for the next charter. ITV, you know, Channel 4, if they don't take account of what people are saying, you know, on the ground, like with local radios, about 6 million people listen to BBC local radio, I'm talking about there. You know, that's a big groundswell of opinion, actually, and it's got to be thought about. And I know that they're thinking about it long term, about how do we sort of manage this migration over to internet TV. But you sort of ignore that groundswell of public opinion at your peril, really.
I think the other thing as well is we must always remember that, especially when cost of living is as difficult as it is, for younger people who want to get into media, it is now probably harder than ever to come down to London, take that, you know, internship that doesn't pay very much, or do that kind of junior gig. And actually, you know, there is amazing talent all across the UK. And you know, at BAL, we've got stations in you know, Scotland, or, you know, Hits Radio's run in Manchester. So, you know, we are across the UK, but we find with, And Matt, you're a big supporter of the Young Audio Awards, which is an awards for young people all across the UK. And we find with our entries, there is so much amazing talent, and it's from all across the UK.
And often it can just be, you know, I've done some stuff for Screen Skills and, you know, getting bursaries just for wet weather gear, or to just get down to London, say, for an audition, or to Manchester, or wherever. These will seem like minute amounts of money in a £4 billion, you know, UK TV industry. That's just the TV side. But this is, you know, the reality of life for lots of people.
Well, something that's been affected by the change in consumer behaviour, well, that's what they're saying, is Newsnight's going to be cut to 30 minutes. It was revealed on Thursday, in part due to the licence fee freeze, also declining audiences. I think, Tara, about 30 jobs are going, particularly the people who make packages for the show, and it's going to be left to be more kind of interviews and panel discussion, which they do have on that programme most nights. Some of that work's going to reappear as the BBC News Investigations Unit. Are they right to make this cut? The show's down to around about 300,000 viewers a night.
I can see why they would do it, because from a sort of cost-benefit analysis point of view. But there is something about that programme, isn't there, that particularly within the news community, within journalism, it's broken so many amazing stories over the years. It's we have the heritage of Paxman, amazing Kirsty.
But should a show like that have 60? Should 60 people work on some television that only 300,000 people watch a night?
But that's public service, isn't it? It's public service broadcasting, having to make that kind of call. I know they have to because of the license freeze. I can see why on paper they need to do it, but I think it's sad because of the kind of journalism and the agenda-setting journalism that it used to do. I know the landscape is changing. We're in a world of TikTok and breaking news, and we consume news in different ways. And the BBC are looking to get younger audiences in and get younger audiences into news. But then you have to think, well, how do they get that across? Because putting it all into TikTok is problematic.
But they just announced they're going to make 1 o'clock news half an hour longer. So it's going to be an hour long show, a bit more of BBC Breakfast. Obviously, there's still Panorama that pops up. Kind of, I sort of feel like there are other places for this to go. Like sometimes it's like we must protect Newsnight at all costs, but sort of protecting it, I'm not always sure is entirely the right thing to do.
Yeah, it can't be an aspic, and maybe, you know, maybe reducing it. It's only by 10 minutes. And actually, as Deborah Tunness said, they've managed to keep it 5 days a week. And this story's been going on for years about will Newsnight be axed? And they have, to their great credit, managed to keep it 5 days a week and make it half an hour. And, you know, who knows, it might reinvigorate it. But it does still seem... sad.
Well, George, speaking of Deborah Tunness, she mentioned that podcasts are potentially the reason that these changes are happening, because a lot of people get, I'm going to get the quote right, high fiber, premium quality conversations in podcasts. And I guess she's talking about news podcasts particularly. You see things like the news agents doing quite well, or even like The Rest Is Politics. Are there people that would have stayed up at 10:45 to consume some politics they can get at 5 p.m. when the newsagents drops.
Yeah, I'm sure absolutely that's the case. And I'm sure there are people that, you know, want to consume newsagents and Newsnight. But without a doubt, there are so many options available to consumers. I think the other thing as well, obviously the BBC has to continually think about the demographics of audience that they want to reach for their sustainability going forward. And, you know, looking at who's watching Newsnight, whereas that 5 million that they're going to save and where it can be reinvested into digital a lot more, how that can attract an audience that perhaps they're not reaching quite as much across, you know, linear television. So I think that's probably a big part of their thinking. But that political podcast landscape right now is doing so incredibly well, isn't it? I mean, there are 4 or 5 massive podcast series in that space that, you know, as you said, I'm sure people are listening on their way home from work. And then at 10 p.m. they're watching Squid Games, obviously.
Yeah. Maybe it's just the way that our viewing is changing. Yeah.
I'm also interested whether the ratings stay roughly the same in a reversioned show.
They might not fall asleep for the last 10 minutes.
So. Yeah, and also, what do people look for in that brand? I think often when you think about Newsnight, I sound like I'm having a real downer on the well-produced packages that they're making, but the things people remember often are the studio-based jousting, which will still remain. Right, so we're back with more media news after this.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome back. Tara and George are here for some more stories. Over to Channel 4, a chief exec, Alex Mann, has said that the ad slump is the worst in 15 years. She was speaking to the Culture, Media and Sports Select Committee on Tuesday. Tara, not a surprise, but that sort of takes us back to the 2008 financial crash, which seemed sort of epic in scale. Maybe people are surprised that it's as bad as it was.
I think that's the thing. They thought the last quarter would be an uptick. You know, people I was talking to sort of in the summer were much more optimistic about the Q4, and it hasn't really happened as they hoped. So, you know, we'll put it into deficit, and they're talking about having to tap into their, was it 75 million credit facility?
Which they've sort of been loath to do.
Yeah.
But have sort of slightly screwed over all the production companies by pushing the risk to them.
That's the thing. I mean, I've spoken to a few producers and they are pretty annoyed, to put it mildly. One of them in particular, a very senior one, I haven't seen him so angry for quite ever, actually.
Especially when they've got access to the money and it doesn't really have any impact for them other than perhaps politically to use it.
Well, I think it's been the communication as well. They feel that Channel 4 was not as upfront, perhaps, as they felt that they could have been about what was happening. Equally, I can see Channel 4's point of view that perhaps they, you know, were sort of learning and hoping that things would improve. But for a lot of indies, obviously, it's a regular source of work for them, and they're just not commissioning as much, I think, as Alex said to the committee. They're not commissioning as much as they would now, and there are production companies which are, there's particularly smaller ones, which are suffering because, you know, BBC is cutting back, particularly in daytime. I've done a couple of stories about that, about them losing some shows, a couple of indies which have closed down because there isn't that same opportunity available. But I think people will be understanding of Channel 4 if they communicate it. And I think, unfortunately as well, you've got the salaries. You know, you've got Alex's salary, which grabbed a lot of headlines. The incentive for people to stay, yes, or relocate.
A huge amount of change. I mean,
yeah,
they needed,
exactly,
them to stay.
Exactly.
It was not looking particularly good for Channel 4, was it?
No, exactly. And that's caught up and kicking in at a really bad time for them as well. And that's, you know, grabbing the headlines. So they're sort of hemmed in from all sides. And that's why Alex was asked, you know, you're going to be staying? And she gave the answer something about how, as long as I'm relevant to the business.
Yes.
Which I thought was a quite good.
And she said most response of the rumours are untrue.
Yes. Well, that's the thing. There are constantly rumours about her going and Ian Katz going and, you know.
They both had a good run. If you look at the sort of pantheon of those people, they've done a similar amount of time and done more than some previous chief execs.
Yeah, exactly. And for media, that's, you know, for telly, it's quite a long time actually to be in one place. There's usually the merry-go-round of controllers and execs. So it will be interesting to see how do they come out of this.
I mean, George, the commercial market, ad market's been pretty tough this year, and there hasn't been really a lot of visibility for anyone, has there?
Yeah, I mean, I think uncertainty is the kryptonite of advertising. It's not even when times are bad, it's when you don't know what is next. That is the thing that is always the most challenging thing for marketers. And I think obviously from a media owner perspective, It's frustrating because we know that the research is there that if you continue to advertise in difficult times, you see such huge benefits in the long run and the market share gains that you can make.
And start back faster than your competitors.
I mean, massively so. And there's an immense amount of research around it. But yeah, it has been a difficult time for pretty much all traditional media. But I do also feel like there has been a sense of more stability in Q4. And obviously going into the new year, we have to hope that we don't have more societal and political chaos, which, you know, right now is never a sure thing. But I do get the sense that things are becoming a bit more stable. There is more confidence in both the media and advertising in markets. And I'm quite quietly, but not so quietly on a podcast, optimistic about Q1 and all of next year. I think we're going to, that the whole market's just going to kind of calm down a little bit, and we're all going to kind of go slightly back to as it was.
That's a good prediction. I mean, talking about things changing, loads of changes at Bauer. I'm gonna reel them off. We've got a new corporate band for Bauer Media, and you've brought me in a lovely new branded cake, which I'll show the YouTube audience. There you go. Thank you for the cake. We've got new branding across all of Bauer. We've got personnel changes. We've lost the MD of Northern Ireland, plus departures of Graham Bryce and Steve Parkinson, who've been there quite a while. And you're taking down your stations from satellite and cable TV platforms, but leaving them on Freeview.
Yep. A lot to unpick there.
I'm so glad we booked you before all of these things happened.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Well, I mean, yeah, firstly, obviously, it's always, you know, sad to say goodbye to amazingly talented people who have done amazing things in the business. It's, you know, going on to the digital TV point, I wrote the stat down because I thought you might bring it up, but it's very low. The kind of the percentage of all radio listening done on all digital television is 4%.
So yes.
It's a very small figure. And I think as households now, the mass adoption of smart speakers has completely changed the audio landscape. And that is a huge growth area. We're seeing kind of an incredible success with smart speaker listening. And, you know, obviously from an advertising point of view and a broadcast point of view, it's opening up the opportunity to do some really, really interesting things, whether it's Fun Kids offering spin-off stations, or Absolute offering spin-off stations, whether that's an advertiser being able to kind of create a really relevant, personalized, customizable message, or actually kind of do really amazing things with advertising where you can interact with an ad and add it to your shopping basket or order it to your house. So smart speakers are this amazing sweet spot for us.
There's so much to do it with telly in that it did really well for radio in the kind of the late 90s into sort of early noughties, kind of pre-DAB distribution as well. And just a great way, I remember getting my On Digital box and some of the radio stations that appeared on there for the first time. But it's not off everything, is it? Like Freeview's, I think it's Freeview sticking around for a bit.
So I think there's kind of certain elements of it. And as I said, you want to be as many places as you can be. The actual kind of percentage of the listening done on those devices is incredibly low, especially when we're seeing this huge growth in digital devices. New brand is so exciting, but I think that new brand kind of represents the quite exciting year ahead for the business. There is a lot of change, a lot of positive digital change as well, kind of a big new digital product which is coming next year, which is going to be really, really exciting. And obviously for both listeners, for the stations, for advertisers, it's going to be a hopefully a big game changer. So I think next year is a very, very exciting year, and this new brand is kind of a lovely way to kick off 2024 with a cake.
We'll see what that is. Yes. Okay, it's just time for the media quiz, this week entitled The Fine Print. So I'm going to mutter the beginning of a media story under my breath. Jeez. You listen very closely and tell me what the hell I'm talking about. It's a best of three, so buzz in with your name if you know the answer. So George, you will say...
George?
Yes, and Tara, you will say...
George.
Can I just say, the last time I was on this podcast, I did terribly...
Oh, that's right. So did I. So did work. Okay. Yeah.
It's a battle for the bottom. Let's play The Fine Print. Question number one. Netflix owns less than 25%.
Tara.
What's going on?
Well, this is about how much original content Netflix owns. And I think it was, they're saying it's, I think it was at Content London, actually, which I was doing a session at this week. Netflix basically said that they actually own less original content now than they used to. I think it used to be 50%. It's now down to about 25%.
So it's sort of like syndication's back, isn't it?
Well, yeah, they're basically saying we don't want to own everything, independent producers, so please come and, you know, work with us. You know, I think is the sort of takeaway from that they're not wanting to just own everything.
Okay, point to you. Right, question number two. The Guardian has struck a TV...
Tara.
I was... I'm too
See,
slow.
See, I should let you say
no,
it.
No, don't be kind.
So just, this is the...
Here we go. Another crushing defeat.
This is the deal with... as I write for The Guardian, I suppose I should know this, but they struck a deal with Sony TV Entertainment. I think it was Wayne Garvey who did the deal. Basically a first look deal on any of those sort of stories that come up. I mean, that doesn't mean to say I think you won't find Guardian journalists, you know, writing like a pitch, you know, rather than
convert one of your columns into a 10-part Netflix special.
They can try if they like, but no, I think
can they, for freelance journalists and for staff, can they just go, oh, we'll have a bit of that?
Well, I don't know. I assume so. I haven't seen the fine print of it all, but yeah, it's basically to develop it into long form content and, you know, put it into series or films or
yeah, well, maybe
whatever.
This is just those Adrian Childs memes can become a
there become was something else. Wasn't there? So yeah. I saw someone had tweeted a piece he did about buying condoms or something and said, is this going to be a series?
The whole series.
I think it was Toby.
There's the urinals as well. Different
question number three. Doctor Who shakes up.
George.
Right, yes.
I've read this story.
What's going on?
They're paying their writers in a different way. Now they've got the big deal with Disney Plus. They are no longer going to be paying their writers on syndication deals. They're just giving them a hopefully big deal up top, and they're just paying them out and they're not going to have to pay them for plays across the world.
That's interesting, isn't it? I mean, obviously that writing has become, particularly if the writer's strike in America, trying to find new ways to pay for content is
I mean, there's a few writers there are nearly 900 episodes of Doctor Who out there, and it was a good way of, you know, getting residuals. You kept getting paid for it. So for some writers, you know, it's going to be really annoying. It's what they called, someone said to me earlier, the midsummer mortgage kind of aspect, which writers like, you know, those often repeated shows, and then they keep getting payments.
The only thing, of course, is I you'd hope the strikes has changed the landscape a little bit, but streaming was paying them peanuts. You know, there's somebody that always appears on my TikTok, a writer who's written loads of comedies in America, and he shares his earnings from Netflix and Disney Plus, and it's nothing, it's peanuts.
It definitely changes the way they all think about their jobs.
Yeah, well, that's what we don't know, is what this if it is bigger buyout that the writers are being paid now. We don't know how much that is, but you can see why they've done it, because it's going global, and so it would be expensive. So you can see why they've done the
buyout. We will keep an eye on that. Well, congratulations, Tara. You finally ascended to the heights of winning the media quiz.
Thank you.
George.
I was happy with the point. You know, I'm a happy loser. I haven't embarrassed myself.
So I win the cake.
A little bit, but yeah.
And as your prize, we get to take all of your material from the media podcast over the years and turn it into a new First Look deal.
Brilliant. Excellent. All yours. Bad luck.
Thank you to you both. Tara, how can people keep up with your work?
It's on The Guardian, Variety, Broadcast, Royal Television Society, Substack, wherever you find those
things.
Omni
platform. And George? Yeah.
Well, I suppose I should say, if you're interested in Sam Thompson and after he's done So Well and I'm a Celebrity, get in touch with us about Hits Radio and get in touch with us about Staying Relevant. It's a brilliant podcast. And of course,
I'm sure we've got some amazing offers.
He's an amazing character.
He's going to at this rate, you know, the way everyone is dropping out or, you know, boycotting.
He's going to win by default.
I think he's a great personality anyway, but I think, I think he's definitely another shout.
He's brilliant. So there's that. Is there a breakfast radio show that people should listen to?
George also has a little side gig, don't you, as the Fun Kids Breakfast presenter.
Yeah, worth a listen, right, Matt?
Listen wherever you listen to radio station.
Yeah, wherever you listen.
Thank you both.
Thank you, Matt.
Brilliant.
And that's it from us today at the London Podcast Studios. And if you're thinking about changing up the look of your podcast for 2024, remember you can get 25% off your first booking at this lovely place when you use the code MEDIAPOD at thelondonpodcaststudios.com. That's MEDIAPOD at thelondonpodcaststudios.com for 25% off. And if you're new to the show, why not hit that follow button and get us in your ears all year round? My name is Matt Deegan. The producer was Ollie Pitt, with support from Maya Cedar-Lund and Matt Hill. It was a Rethink Audio production. I'll see you next week.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.